You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, 7:07 in the morning. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. Local news and talk. We are 48 hours away from our amazing happy hour at Dominic's Real Italian for really good East Coast Italian and good, very, very good pizza, really good calzones, garlic butter slathered garlic knots. It's all good stuff. Please join us 5:30 to 7:30. A good portion of you have RSVP'd at wakeuptucsoncomments@gmail.com. Again, it's a courtesy to Ted, the owner, to make sure that he staffs up properly because he's got to take care of us and he's got to take care of his regular clients. And there'll be live music. I believe Brooke Sample is the live music performer. So it's going to be a hoot and a holler at Dominic's Real Italian.
Nice.
Yeah, we're not messing around here, dude.
No.
You know, we're not doing some homeless guy with a harmonica like some of the other radio shows do around here. We're going first class, so can't wait to see you guys on Thursday. Thanks to Andy Biggs for the call-in. Again, lots of stuff going on in the world. Greg, our production wizard, and now Raymundo part two, will be in the third hour. He's got some interesting rants about panhandling in Tucson, which just seems to be getting better and better and better. Good morning to Ted Maxwell, Southern Arizona Leadership Council.
Good morning, Chris. How are you doing today?
Very well. Welcome back.
Thank you. Always glad to be here.
So we don't have much time.
Well, you know, when I was listening on the way in, I'm going, oh, you just scared the hell out of me. 11 ballot propositions. 11. Now, there's going to be some court challenges on a couple of the Citizens Initiative ones, but think about that. There's going to be more advertising in the state of Arizona on this year's elections. Both in support, but probably more advertising against candidates, because
right.
That's how we've turned. Is let's bring up the stuff which in the last hour you addressed. A lot of it doesn't have to even be real; just has to have some semblance of getting people to believe it. We've gone to such a dichotomy of how we run our campaigns. It's no longer about what are the qualities and the good qualities and what the good qualities of the parties or of the people are. It's, well, this is why you shouldn't like that person. This is why they're evil. And you heard Andy addressed it when he came on, when you brought up what does the party need to do.
Right.
And every single item he talked about was a positive thing. He did not focus negatives. You didn't hear him talk, we need to highlight the election. We didn't. No, it's let's show what we will do better is the way we should be campaigning. Unfortunately, it's not. And then after you wade through that entire long mess of a ballot, you're going to get to, as of right now, 11 propositions that are going to be on the ballot for the citizens to decide what will become law. And that is good in and of itself.
Yes.
The danger of it is, under the Voter Protection Act, once that occurs, there's almost nothing that can be done to change any of it, even if there's portions of that law that everybody would agree are not good for the state of Arizona.
And this is something you and I have talked so many times about. It's too easy to get a proposition on the ballot. The legislature kicks stuff to the ballot that you just wish they would just do their damn job and vote on.
Absolutely.
Right.
And there's challenges there. You know, there's so many things that we've put in place, a lot of them during the 90s. There was a lot of movement, especially from the voters, voting these laws in. And so now you've got the Voter Protection Act. You got the supermajority requirements, the legislature to make changes. There's just a lot of issues that when you start adding them all up, makes for inefficient process and procedures. And you're right. Eight of the 11 this year on the ballot, eight of them are legislative referrals. Now, some of them are referrals where the legislators don't have the authority to make the change, either because of a previous vote that has gone in front of the people and is now protected, or otherwise. But still, eight of those that they've put to the ballot this year came from the legislature. So it's going to be a very interesting election cycle.
So we're going to start with a short one, then we're going to go to break, and then we're going to go to the blank and the punch bowl, as we call it, which is that fair and free elections thing. Free and fair elections. That is a train wreck.
It's only 27 pages long, Chris. It's only 27 pages long.
I saw those people getting the field works guys were out in front of the Target in Oral Valley signing people. And I saw them at the farmer's market, and I'm sitting there going, none of these people know what they're signing.
Well, and the scary part about it, and there was even a maneuver, you know, not a maneuver, there's some legislation that was trying to go forward last year that's going to put in the requirement that you have to either read the entire 200-word document, or it has to be read, or the challenge is the names of these things make them all sound great.
Free candy and teddy bears.
And when they come up to you on that case, it was just, I have a hard time walking away from them. I generally don't. I turn around and I end up engaging with them. And then 10 minutes later, I walk off having not signed it, because they look at you, are you in favor of free and fair elections? absolutely. Well, will you sign this? Well, what's it tell me? Oh, it's going to ensure that we have free and fair elections. It's 27 pages long. There's no way even in a 200-word document, I mean, a 200-word statement, you're going to get any of it out there.
I'd walk by them with people and I would start yelling, don't sign that crap. Ask him how many pages it is. And the guy's like, bro, you're harshing my groove here, man.
And the amazing thing is sometimes there are a lot of efforts and initiatives that are grassroots, where people are the ones out actually getting the signatures, you know, the citizens. But quite often, and majority of the times, there's probably people being paid. And my understanding, because we didn't do that, it was up to about $12 a signature. Think about that for a second.
Signatures this year.
$12 a signature.
Signatures this year, because I was looking earlier this year for some other candidates out there just trying to help them out, and I saw $15 to $16 a signature. That's just insane.
I mean, think about the money you're making if you get 3 signatures an hour.
I'm telling you. All right, the one I want to get to is 129. We'll just start off there. Well, a little appetizer before we get to free and fair elections. Initiative single subject title. Someone's trying to actually bring a little simplicity to this? Is that what I'm saying?
Well, it's actually more of a clarification. I mean, we already have single subject titles in there, and you can already, this defines better to the courts what it means by being single subject.
Right.
I mean, one of the questions is, if you have multiple, let's talk about the free and fair elections. Everything's probably election related, but not all of it's actually the conduct of the election. It may be collecting signatures, how you get registered, how you do. So in theory, that one could be challenged just on the single subject alone. But sometimes there's hand in hand where you have to have two pieces to make something effective. Alaska challenged there when they were changing their election system. It was challenged in court to meet their single subject. It was determined that the three actions, which was a dark money, a open primary, and a voter vetting system, the court said all three of those impact elections directly. So they kept that as a single subject. But it's so loose for interpretation, it's why a lot of the things do end up in court. So this kind of clarifies. It actually makes it a little bit more stringent on what you have to have to make it fit on a single subject, because people are always pushing the bounds on what a single subject is.
All right, let's go to break. Now, I want you to get ready for this segment about free and fair elections. So I want you to, you know, get your steel-cut oats in the bowl, right? Then I want you to go get your bottle of Jack Daniels in the back of the cabinet and pour yourself a little Jack. Not too much, because you're going to need it to get through free and fair elections with Ted Maxwell and I. So if you want to do a primal scream, 790-2040 is the phone number. WakeUpTucsonComments@gmail.com. Olivia covers Frankie and Jobim. How insensitive. Here we go. So true, Olivia. So true. 790-2040 is the number. Especially that Garfield Monday we had a couple of Mondays ago, Matt. No, it was 2 Mondays ago. That was something special. All right, let's get to something that's also going to get you down. It's free and fair. That just sounds so counterintuitive, right, Ted Maxwell?
Like the Inflation Reduction Act?
Like the Inflation Reduction Act. I love the believability on the polling on that right now. Only 12% of the people actually believe. Well, at least America got that one right. So,
well, the interesting thing about that side of it is it's the folks that are creating the laws that are making those names for the bills, whereas here you've got people who are passionate about what they're doing. Because don't get me wrong, the folks that go out and collect these signatures, that make these efforts on the Citizens Initiative, they're really passionate about what they do, and that's one of the ways.
If they're not paid.
Oh, not the signature gatherers. I'm talking the people behind the effort behind the initiatives. They are very passionate. I think more and more we find that there's a lot of outside interests that come into play on some of those. If we get to the predatory debt issue, that's
right.
There's a lot of evidence that that's coming from a lot from outside state funding and support and different organizations behind it. But people are passionate about it. But until we either modify and create a system for the Citizens Initiative, we end up tending to get things that are driving 15, and I guess you said you just got a text saying $20 a signature.
Yeah, Billy number two, one was just saying that they were paying $20 a signature in Maricopa County.
Yet the folks working in the ERs late at night as EMTs are probably making $15 to $17 an hour. Incredible.
Even the kid at In-N-Out's only making 16. So maybe 18 if you're killing it.
Exactly.
Now, this Arizona. Now I saw Shelly put it in her e-tracks. It was a video against this thing. They called it 209.
Yeah, I saw that, and I looked yesterday on the Secretary of State's website after talking to you, and if you go there, there's no numbers yet assigned to these. All the citizens' initiatives will receive 200s. So they will be in the 200 model, but as of yesterday, whether it's been updated, Shelley may have better information from this is what it's going to be, but it's not published yet on the Secretary of State website.
Okay, so now 50...
Over 50.
50 that's an Arizona elections law in one proposition that encompasses 27 pages.
And that is my concern and trouble with this bill. It's just too large. There's too many things. I think a lot of folks can go through and you go, okay, that's reasonable. Oh, that's not. Oh, that's reasonable. That's not. But the problem is once this gets passed, it would be voter protected. And the only way you could change any piece of it would be to go back to the voters.
I said earlier, my words of doom on this is that if this thing passes, Arizona's toast. It's toast.
It would change the rules, and everybody would probably figure out how to play and use the rules to their advantage. That's what the parties do right now. But the fact of the matter, and this is Ted Maxwell's opinion.
Yes.
Not SLC's. This is Ted's, very clear. I think it's too much, too fast, and it's for the wrong reasons. In my opinion, it's trying to take advantage of the political situation. What I loved about Andy Biggs' argument this morning on when you asked him what the party needs to do to get people to come back, and more importantly, to keep those independents and the moderate Republicans in line with the votings. The things he focused on was the positive things that he believed they would do. There was no discussion about the past, no discussion about things. Now, do not misinterpret anything I'm saying. I'm a big believer in continuous improvement. That includes in our election systems. We need to make continuous improvement. But this 50, more than 50 changes in one bill.
If you sat down with any reasonable human being and you took 30 seconds to explain what we're doing, they're a no.
Absolutely. Right, and it's like we said, it's 27 pages long. Now, that doesn't mean there's not legislation that's 27 pages long, but legislation's created by legislators, decided by legislators. It's not something that you're going to put in front of the people, because I would bet right now that less than 2% of our voters will have read all 27 pages and go in and they'll vote.
So there seems to be a very continuous automatic voter registration going on with this thing.
There is. There's a lot of automatic voting. A lot of it requires proof of citizenship, but it's same. There's also same day. There's a lot of changes to how you can go about registration.
Same day what?
Voter registration.
So same day. What day are you talking about?
Election day. So there are a lot of things that one of the biggest.
Why do I think the girl in that video said something about you'll even get you'll get voter registered to vote if you get a fishing license? I think she said that.
I know there is as it appears to my interpretation of it, it does require that you have to demonstrate citizenship when you do it. But there's processes in this system. There's things that are out there. It does reestablish the permanent early voters list. It talks loosely about the review. Obviously, I would hope there's still some review in it, but early voting, again, Ted Maxwell's opinion is a good thing. The majority of Arizonans vote early.
Let's do this. Everything is Ted Maxwell's opinion unless you say it's an SALC opinion.
Appreciate that. But the majority of Arizonans vote early. I voted early this year. Chris, did you? I think you've always historically gone to the ballots. That's something you just like to do on voting day as well. But if you look at the majority of the Republicans, you look at President Trump came out very early on day one of early voting, said, hey, this system works. You've got to use it. Get out and vote. I think it's something that the one thing that's going to upset a lot of folks in here is it does allow people to deliver other folks' ballots.
That's crap, too.
So it essentially takes a look at that harvesting side of it and makes it valid. Now, there's some things in there that you're going to look at and you go, okay, I can live with that. That's okay.
There's
That's
so many ways
it's not
to
an
return
all
your ballot that you don't need someone else to do it. You better be unbelievably sick.
To me, the key on this one remains too many changes, too broad, all garnered under free and fair. The title. It's too much for inclusion of specifics in a single citizens initiative.
Restricts reviews and subpoenas concerning ballots and election material. Is this a good thing?
There's no.
Thank you. I wasn't missing.
No, no. There's that, and that's the challenge
that's
on all
Ted
this.
That's
Ted
who said that. Yeah.
Well, and that's the challenge on this initiative and specifically. It's so broad, so wide, so much is going to be left up for interpretation. You know what? I mean, you and I are taking most of our stuff off of a couple hundred word, you know, summary of it, and there's still like we can find stuff that would not be beneficial for the true conduct of our elections. You know, it's going to lead to more arguments and more disgruntlement, not less. And what we need to do is make changes that are going to lead to more consensus that the elections in Arizona are free and fair, not that there's more troubling opportunities.
Adds postmark before close of polls on election day as good for an early ballot. That's a nightmare also.
It's going to change the counting. We're already hearing people complain about the counting that's currently going on. And if you look at it, Bill Beard did a phenomenal post, I believe it was a Facebook, but it was a long breaking out. Listen, we've always taken time to it. People got so used to the results being declared on election night. Well, all of a sudden when they were changing after election night, then people are going, well, what's going on here? Well, it's always been that way. It takes time. If you want those signatures validated, you need to do it. If you make it election day, guess what? You're pushing it another 7 or 8 days. I mean, it is going to take
longer.
Again,
with these early ballots, we need to have, if it's not postmarked, to me, like a week out, kiss off and just show up and
vote. And right now, it has to be received, and you take a chance. They make it. It was very clear this year in the election. If your ballot's not in the drop box today, and I think it was the Wednesday before the Tuesday election, your vote may not make it there in time. In that case, you have the option to drop it at the ballot as well.
Have we found out from anyone yet how many ballots they didn't count that they said are ineligible? I'd love to know what that number is.
That would be an interesting one. And it was interesting. Again, I appreciated Bill's synopsis of it because he talked about the number of procedures you go through on how many signatures they look back to see if there's changes or if it... We can improve things. No doubt about it. I just don't believe this is the way to do it.
All right. Let's go to break. Ted and I got another 10 to go. Nine to go. Wake up, Tucson. Ah, that's a big one for ONJ. Love it. Little Olivia Newton-John, rest in peace, young lady, passed away at age 73. A lot of males on our Facebook thread on this said that she was their first crush, so that's a good place to be.
Oh, for those of us that grew up in the 70s, there's no doubt. There were a lot of Olivia Newton-John posters, and they may have been more on the guys' rooms than the girls' rooms, I'm
Heck
sure.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah. God rest your soul, young lady. Ted and I are going through a hellscape of 11 propositions.
Hey, we've made it through two. Now, one thing to follow up on the free and fair elections one, that is one of the ones I believe will be challenged in court. It is just so broad because it's not just about election change. It's all related to elections. But, you know, the thing we didn't mention on there is it significantly reduces the amount of money you can give in support of candidates.
Yep.
For a local race, it lowers it down to $1,000 maximum per candidate.
Well, and if you're the party that the media already loves, You love reducing the other side of it.
And the irony of reducing what the individuals can give, because that goes direct to the candidates, is that just means the outside PAC money becomes more and more influential.
So do you ever see in a movie there's a detective trying to figure out the serial killer, and he has all the clippings on the wall, the newspaper clippings, and he has the string that goes there? I'm telling you, Sandiford already at Goldwater already has one of those on the wall for this piece of crap prop.
There's, like I said, this is one I think is going to make it to the courts. Personally, I believe it will be very hard for this to withstand a court challenge. I just think there's just so much to it. And the thing is, they got 475,000 signatures, which is way above the requirement. I mean, it was almost double, because it's also a statute law. Now, statute law can also be challenged after it goes into place and eliminate pieces of it. So, that you know, citizens' initiatives are always going to be fraught with court challenges.
Wait till you see the battle on this one before it's go over. It also says, this is Anna, let's not forget in the free and fair election initiative, you can't challenge signatures anymore if that passes.
Right. There's things, and we talked about it. It overturns the 2016 law about delivering ballots. There's just things that I think are too big of issues that you just can't support it.
All right. Let's go through them. We'll just go numerically. Voter Protection Act court determinations. Give me a snapshot on this. Number one, the first one.
That's the one we talked about before the show. Is it basically changes the law that allows the legislature to change the voter protection, the current Voter Protection Act. If something's passed by the citizens, legislatures can't touch it, and except to further the intent of the proposition. This takes that further, the intent of the proposition, away. If the court, either the Arizona Supreme Court or the U.S. Supreme Court, finds some piece of a bill unconstitutional, it effectively takes the restrictions of the legislature off. They can start changing that bill and how it's put in place. And it implies without intent to the regular or to the initial intent of the proposition itself. And the biggest one on that's if there's money involved and there's taxes, then it opens the legislature to basically sweep the money and use it in other places. So it's a challenge. It's got some challenging parts to it. It is a bill intended to solve the citizens' initiative problem we've got versus trying to figure out some way for us to address the citizens' initiative problem we've got.
I already have the no in my head. It's going to say, "Don't let them rob your voice." I'm telling you, it's happening.
No, it's amazing commentary. That's one of the most common things, is everybody deserves a voice. But what you find out when you dig down on it, everybody deserves a voice if it's in agreement with my voice.
Well, welcome to politics, right?
Absolutely.
Prop 130, property tax exemption. Who are we exempting property taxes?
This is just one that it goes towards giving individuals and others exemption from tax for certain property and public goods, deeds. It's one that believes that any, like when we're taxing cars, we're taxing other properties, things that shouldn't be taxed not on a continuing or continual basis.
But we're also going to exempt...
The devil's probably in the detail.
We're also going to exempt the federal, state, county, and municipal properties from being property taxed.
That's part of what's in there as well. Yep. There's a lot...
Is that the crux of this?
This is one that you've got... I think this is more in line allowing the legislature, gives the legislature the power to grant exemptions to certain properties. But this is one... I mean, a lot of these, the devil's in the details. And that's one that... Do not have enough detail. The biggest kicker on that one's to take a look at the fiscal note and how they think it will impact the revenues collected by the state of Arizona.
Prop 131, Lieutenant Governor Joint Ticket.
So this would require, right now, I think there's approximately 27 states that have a Lieutenant Governor where we don't. Our Secretary of State is effectively the next in line should something happen to our Governor. This would create a situation that any Governor who, or any individual who earns a place on the ballot to be governor, has to declare a lieutenant governor, and then that person's role is literally to be the governor in waiting. Is should something happen, it doesn't really define how they're going to pay for that, or if it means that's going to be another one less position the governor can have in their budget, or if the funding for it's the question of how that would occur. Senator Mesnard had a bill that went through the legislature.
What's the governor get paid? 95 thou, right?
I think so. I think it's about that. Most it's
dropping a bucket. $16 billion budget, kids.
I'll tell you what. They're spending
that on Q-tips.
It's probably ironic. The chief of staff probably makes more money than the governor does.
I bet.
So a lot of the staffers do in that situation. There's one that Senator Mesnar passed, and I believed it got signed into law, that would basically create the same situation with the lieutenant governor, but the lieutenant governor would act as the department head for one of the departments inside the administration, and that's where the funding to pay for that individual would come from.
I kind of like this, I think, because, you know, in case something does happen to your governor, the will of the voters on who's the chief executive gets kind of carried better.
It puts people in precarious situations. This year, there was a lot of rumor that maybe Governor Ducey would come out and run for Senate. I mean, right. That was the rumor, and that's why a lot of people were holding off on who they were going to endorse on the Republican ticket, where they were going to get out. And that was the big, you know, question in the thing. But at the same time, as Governor Ducey, and I never thought he would declare, but if he had, that meant the current sitting governor would be Katie Hobbs going in. So it puts you in a position where there was more to consider about the future of party related. Whereas you look at it, vice president, we make them be the same party. They're declared after the election. It basically turns the lieutenant governor's seat into a vice president seat, and it's selected the same way. You don't have to declare who your running mate is until after the election.
I think I kind of like it on first glance. 132, initiative supermajority vote.
So this is one that started going through the legislature in 2020. To put on the ballot that any citizens initiative, again, there's a lot, several of these bills go after the citizens initiatives, to put on the ballot that any citizen initiative would have to have 60% to pass. So they'd have to have some sort of, and those who are keep in touch with how voting turns out on initiatives or, you know, 60% is a big number. That was the concern. During the legislative session, they changed it, and they took it down to now only initiatives that have tax implications. So either a raising of tax or a creation of a new tax has to have 60% vote to pass. So effectively, the argument for it is, hey, we require require 60% from the legislature to vote and pass a tax increase. Why don't we require that from the citizens?
This will be a hoot and a holler.
There will be a lot of folks on both sides screaming up and down about this one. You know, the 60% is a big number when you're talking about taxes. That may be a good idea. But on the opposition, if the viewpoint is you're really restricting the voters and their citizens' initiative. Why take more away from the citizens? It's gonna get some attention. But as we said earlier, Chris, all the real money and airtime is going to go into the campaigns. So a lot of these initiatives may get very little information out there. It's going to be...
Which most of these people want.
Right.
I mean, you're going to be so sick of Blake Masters and Mark Kelly by the time you get to November 8th.
There is no doubt proponents for bills wanting to be judged on the name of the bill alone, or for propositions wanted to be judged on the name of the proposition alone. And that's why it's going to require folks like you, local radio, to really start talking about some of these in depth to try to get the word out there. And I mean, I knew our voters and our citizens all got better educated when they go into the ballot.
No, sir.
But there's a reason we've got the party designations next to names, because otherwise you'd just be picking off names for a lot of people.
Well, and you'd be forcing you to maybe do a little work.
Right. Well, that's
what I like about nonpartisan in the towns.
Right.
Right. You have to go find out maybe what they actually do, or what they didn't do, or what they believe. Right.
Just or the fear is you just show up and you go, oh, I like that name. And that happens way too often. People want to be involved, but they don't always necessarily want to be informed.
Well, if I run, if that happens, I'm going to change my name to Carlos Danger Jr. and we'll go from there. So
did I just hear you say when you run?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's going to happen. That was Christy Simona said that, not Wake Up Tucson Leadership Council. All right, let's go to break, visit some great sponsors. Ted and I have at least a few more to go before the top of the hour. And then we're going to have our first annual panhandling summit with the great Greg Gerringer coming up next. You're on Wake Up Tucson. There she is. I used to roller skate the crap out of this song.
Yeah, so why does this just have this vision of those leggings and the spandex? I mean, it's just a flashback.
Now, I don't know if you know this.
You on roller skates, that's another thing I would have loved to see.
Oh, I was badass.
I'm sure you were the king of the rink.
CJ from Saguaro Corners, I just Google image Carlos Danger Jr. Bad idea. Now, if you guys don't know this, Matt Neely is very involved at the U of A School of Dance, and he still has his leg warmers that he has and his little Benetton.
I had them bronzed. Yes.
And his Capizios. Matt Neely and Capizios. That's so cute. Noah, states that have lieutenant governors usually have the lieutenant governor has secretary of state duties and responsibilities.
Yeah, and I think that would be a great answer. I don't think it's defined in this thing. That was the intent of Mesnard's bill, is they will have somebody else's duties and responsibilities. Part of it's just changing the name, because right now, again, we go back to how informed the citizens of Arizona are. I'm not sure how many of them understand this, that the secretary of state is the next in line to be the governor.
All right, we're going to postpone 308 for a bigger conversation. This is Dreamer Tuition, and we only have 7 minutes, so I agree with that. We'll do that on your next appearance.
Yeah, I think that would be a good discussion. It's definitely one that there's a lot to talk about and unwind on that one.
309, voter ID requires date of birth and voter identification for mail-in ballots, eliminates the two-document alternative to photo ID for in-person. What you think?
It also adds that ADOT is required to issue free of charge a photo ID for anybody who wants one. Now, we already have the photo ID on the as a requirement to vote in person. You have to bring a photo ID or the alternative two documents. But this also leads into the bigger issues, really probably the mail-in ballots. And I believe that I don't see a problem with putting any identification you want if you're going to let me vote by mail. I did it for years in the military.
ADOT,
do it now.
Charging a fee to issue a non-operating ID license. I don't know if you may not know this. What do I have to bring to get a non-operating ID license under this thing? Are they changing that, or do I just have to be a breathing human being?
No, you still have to bring in some form of proof of citizenship.
Okay.
So it would still require that.
Arizona Fire District Safety Act.
If this is a 0.1 cent increase to allow the fire districts more funding.
Hold on, Grover Norquist. No!
And we will leave that one at there. The interesting one are the two that we've still got 5 minutes to cover.
Okay, so just real quick. The 0.1 of a sales tax, for what?
It's just an increase. It gives them a little more... my understanding, and this one is one that we've not really looked at all that hard because it's
so this is for like Golden Ranch Fire
right.
District. These guys make enough money as it is,
and that's the argument against it, Chris, right there.
Get the hell out of here.
So it is just
oh man, yeah. All right, let's get to proposition, because we don't have numbers. It sounds even better. XXX.
Yeah, there you
don't
go.
Look that up, CJ, either. Voter rights.
So the voters know. Voter rights to know.
Yes, sir.
Terry Goddard and his group has been behind this one for years trying to get it on, and this year they came in with a much larger number of signatures, and I think where it's going to act for the first time get to the ballot. It would require that any contribution coming from a PAC that's more than $50,000, they have to disclose who the donors to that PAC were that made more than five, that made a larger than $5,000 donation. What it's trying to do, and at $25,000 is the limit for local and legislative campaigns, currently there's probably more money spent by outside PACs than there are as part of campaigns, yet the campaigns have to disclose everybody that makes donations. I mean, anybody that makes over $50 donations in a local PAC here in the city of Tucson, we have to disclose. Same thing at the state. It is a lot of work, but at the same time, it ensures that everybody can take a look and go, oh, look at all the people that donate. I mean, you've done that before on the show where you're going down to see who's donated to support a candidate.
Of course.
Well, this would put a requirement at the $5,000 level or the $2,500 level on basically on PACs.
Hey, CJ did look that up, Matt, and he said his computer froze, so we'll be fine. all right. So my thing on this little debrief for that, this one about the voters' right to know the Terry Goddard thing, current law exempts any group classified by the IRS as a social welfare organization from having to list their contributors. What is that? What's an example of it? I don't know if you know or not.
I don't. I can give you a perfect example of what's a social welfare organization, but I'll come back to you on more information on that. It's interesting when you see where sometimes the campaign donations come from. Because you kind of go, well, that's not right in their bailiwick. But 501c3s are authorized and allowed to spend a certain amount of money on campaigns and on political activity.
Well, we'll get you back in the next 30 days and we'll have
plenty of time.
We'll do it up. Well, I mean, if we do it in 30 days, it's only 30 more days until early ballots go out. It's
coming fast. Well, and that's why I think it's important to start talking about these issues now. There's so much more to unwind on these. I mean,
predatory. I want to say that we got all these in.
11 in an hour.
Well, we'll do
10.
We're not going to. We're skipping 308, right? But it's still good. After we were real slow in the beginning, Predatory Debt Collection Protection Act.
So Predatory Debt Collection Act, it was sold when you talk to somebody who was collecting signatures for it as more of the ability to protect people from losing everything they've got when they get a huge hospital bill. The problem is it's not restricted just to hospital bills.
Right.
And what it does is there are folks out there who, if you talk to them, they're going to tell you that what this is going to make is going to make it harder for those in need, most in need for loans, to get through hardship or times from getting it. But it significantly increases the amount that you can have exempt from wage garnishment, which anybody who's lending money, if it's harder for them to collect the money's not going to be as available, especially to those who don't have a high level of income or have other things to show for it. But it takes the home up to $400,000, takes your car up to $15,000 exempt. Now, that means if you've got a car worth less than $15,000, they can't come get it to potentially, and there's some discussion on repos and if this is going to affect those type of issues. But it just makes
it looks like it if they're...
Exactly. It just makes it more difficult for anybody who's lent money to somebody to get that money back. And that means the availability of money to those people is going to be significantly reduced. What you're going to hear a lot about is the stories of the enormous hospital bills that people have racked up, and then it's ruined their lives completely. But that's it. It does not restrict it just to hospital bills. It's any loans.
So in the end, right, if this actually passed, anyone who's doing these type of loans will just pound everyone else who they do business with to cover the amount of stuff that they can't cover from these people.
And I think when you start unwinding the money and trying to find who's really behind this, that's when you start going, okay, that now we understand. It is not good for, it's going to be claimed as it's helping the poor. It's actually going to harm their ability both in times of needs and on a normal basis.
Well, right. So basically what they'll say is they say more than ever, we don't have to lend you anything.
Absolutely.
Right. And then if we are lending you, everyone else who does pay their bill, they're going to get an extra 17% bump on what they're paying to cover the person we can't get from.
Amen. All costs of lost collections are put on the rest of us.
That's what's going to happen.
So it hurts both. It hurts everybody involved in the loan system.
All right. Good hour, Mr. Maxwell.
Always enjoy it, Chris. And I can't believe that you actually formally announced you're going to run for office today.
It's happening. Absolutely.
All right.
Christy Simone, Ted Maxwell. The summit happens next.